7 of the most happy and profitable years of my life were spent with the Billy Graham team. And the Lord knew He was going to take Doss Trotman, and He knew He had me in mind to take over that responsibility. If I'd have been planning it, I'd have been with Doss and alongside of him 5 years previous to his death. But the Lord had other things in mind, and so He gave me this tremendous opportunity with the Billy Graham team for 5 years previous to that. Now, as I look back on it, not only was it one of the greatest opportunities for ministry that I have ever had in my life, but I also have seen that its broadening and experience and breadth of perspective and many other things that I needed to better prepare me for the task that I have now. And, of course, we have very close friends with the Billy Graham team. And around the dinner table tonight, we had 7 of them, the Barrows clan. And 2 are here, Cliff Barrows' wife, Billy, and their oldest daughter, Bonnie. And I'd like to welcome them. And I was sitting back there debating. I said, no, I'm not going to say anything about them. They might like to blend into the crowd. Then I thought, well, no, it's not fair to the rest of them. So I barely had schizophrenia back there trying to decide. And I should have been thinking about my message. I thought, shall I have them stand or shall I not? Well, if I'm going this far, I may as well have them stand. Don't you think so? All right. Thank you, Bonnie and Billy. Thank you. It's a real delight to have them here. The first evening we were together, we talked on the subject of why I am a follower of Jesus Christ. No one ever spoke like Jesus spoke. No one ever lived like Jesus lived. No one ever died like Jesus died. And no one ever rose from the dead like Jesus rose from the dead. And then night before last, we talked on this, the doctrine of God. Who He is and what He is like. God is a spirit and God is a person. Now tonight, as I said, we're going to continue this on what you might say the doctrine or the Bible teaching concerning man. But from a little bit different angle than you would find in an average book on Bible doctrine. I think I have several reasons for having a little different angle. And probably, to be honest, the most apt reason is that I prepared a message previously that I wanted to bring tonight regardless of how I took off. The Navigator work is now extends to 20 countries in the world. It has been growing by leaps and bounds. We are decentralizing, which is the only healthy way for work to grow and have an impact. And the question has, of course, come across my mind. How do we keep people going in the same direction? Excuse me while I take care of some of the animals. That's one less. How do we keep going in the same direction when we are scattered so far apart? I believe that the Lord has raised up the Navigators for a unique purpose. If He did not, then there's no excuse for their existence, and we ought to fold up. But if there is a unique purpose, we should stick with it. And so earlier this year, I began to give myself to this thought. What are the basic tenets or the basic beliefs that through the years underlie the Navigator work? You know, it's true that we look at a thing, whether it be an organization or an individual, and we look somewhere if there's some degree of success, and we see the externals. And usually what we see first is not the reason the blessing of God is upon it. And there are some reasons behind the reason. There are some basic underlying beliefs that underlie everything we do. And one of those is on this subject of a human being, a man, a woman, an individual. And I have entitled this, I have a title just for one or two messages, and this is one, The Significance of Every Individual. The significance of every individual. And the more I have thought about this, and I've thought and prayed about it a great deal this year, the more impressed I am with the mysteriousness of human life. Now, I look out at you tonight, and I don't know you. Some of you I have known, in one sense, for some years. I don't really see you, and you don't really see me. What do I see? I see sort of a composite of your background, your home life, and I'm astounded as I see how much impact home life does have on us, particularly when I meet some of the parents of our staff members, and I can see that they are spitting images of the parents. Also, you are a product of your environment, but also as I see you and as you walk in here and as we talk for a few moments, I also see what you'd like to be or what you're pretending to be. And it takes a long time to really get down underneath, behind all this, to the real you, to the real me. A couple of years ago, 2.5 years ago, I began to have an increasing unrest in my own soul, which resulted in my taking a couple of months alone, most of the time with the Lord, to get some new direction and some new promises. But there was one thing that had bothered me a great deal. That people had built up an image of what the president of the Navigators ought to be like. And I found myself unconsciously trying to meet that image. And you know, that'll tear you apart. All of us face this somewhere along the line. And so they sort of kid me about it now. But I took these 2 months and I said to the Lord, "Now, Lord, I'd like some new direction, some new promises of the Scripture for just me, Lauren Sanney, private citizen." So they call me now Lauren Sanney, private citizen. But down inside, there's the real you and the real me. There's something mysterious about human life. We have a personnel board and the Navigators now. I'm sure glad I got in before we had one, because I never would have made it. And we've been talking about such things as personality and one thing and another. How does it fit in selection of people for a staff? In Changing Times this spring, the April issue, they said in spite of tons of material on personality development, very little is known about it. In fact, in other reading, I have discovered that there isn't very much definitive on what personality is, to say nothing about how to develop it. So as I say, we're talking about something mysterious and wonderful, complex and fascinating, in some ways disagreeable, and yet very precious. A human being, one person. The significance of every individual. Phillips Brooks said, "If we could see how precious the human soul is as Christ saw it, our ministry would approach the effectiveness of Christ." If you and I could just get a glimpse of the preciousness of one human soul as Christ saw it, our ministry would approach the effectiveness of Christ. And yet today, in 1964, it seems more difficult than ever to maintain a sense of the significance of an individual. He's lost in the population explosion. Well over 3 billion of us now. He becomes a statistic. He's lost in the communist domination of state over the individual. And though big business leadership tries to avoid it, he still seems inexorably drawn into a loss of individuality as a cog in the machine. Or maybe he's suppressed as being inferior. Mass communication stereotypes him. Or he simply is the silent partner all evening long in front of the TV set, and nobody gets to know anybody else. Really. And yet, you know, there's something in a human being that cries out for recognition. There is something built into every one of us that just senses inside that life must have some significance. There must be some meaning. There must be some purpose. And whenever this significance is stifled, oppressed, or held down, there is inside a smoldering and increasing pressure to revolt and finally an explosion. Witness some of our problems in the world today. There's something in a person that's built there. God put it there. That we just know there has to be significance or meaning to life. Now this idea of the basic significance, or the basis rather, for the significance of an individual really has at its basis two things. One, the worth of an individual. Two, the possibilities of an individual as a channel of divine blessing. One, the worth of an individual. Every person here tonight, every one of you, has value. You have worth. It's built in. This is absolute. You are worth something to God. There may be someone you feel, well, I'm not worth much to anybody, or there aren't many people who think I'm of much value. But I can tell you this. You are of inestimable value to God. Turn with me back to Genesis chapter 1. Genesis 1, verses 26 and 27. Well, 27 and 28. Now the point here is that every person is significant to God. Every one of us, every individual here, is of value because of creation, because you were created in the image and likeness of God. See what it says here? So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them. And God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves upon the earth. So we were created in the image and likeness of God. The very nature of God. That is personality. The power of abstract thought. The ability to choose, emotions, feelings, a spiritual nature. And these powers go on forever. A flower blooms and dies. An animal returns to the dust. But man does not cease to think or to feel at death. Jesus told the story of the rich man who was in torment after he had died. Lazarus, on the other hand, was in a place of rest. These powers go on forever. Therefore, one person, just one person, anyone here, all by himself or herself, is worth more than this whole earth full of irrational creatures. Remember what Jesus said? He said, are not five sparrows sold for 2 pennies? And yet my Father takes notice of every one of them. Not one is forgotten. Not one. And then what did he say? As it puts it in one translation, he said, you are worth more than flocks of sparrows. So if my Father in heaven does not lose sight of one sparrow, and you are worth flocks of sparrows, you mean a lot to God. Just by his creation. And so if this earth, just all of a sudden, with all of its irrational creatures and everything else that's on it except other people, just went poof, just ceased, there'll be less of a loss than if one soul cease to exist. The worth of just one individual. By creation. But then we know that something happened way back there, didn't it? Man sinned. As a result, he was alienated from God. He became a slave to sin. He became in conflict or at war with his fellows. But God thinks so much of that person, of those people, human beings that he created, that while the image was marred, they became rebels and alienated from God. They became slaves to themselves and to sin, became at war with one another. He still felt them well worth the price of redeeming. All we like sheep have turned astray, or gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way, and the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. We were redeemed, you and you and you and me, not by corruptible things such as silver and gold, but with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot. As we'd said the other night, God sent his Son. What could he have done that would have been any greater? Name it. What could it be? And was it with the blood of this Son, heaven's best, that he redeemed us? See, it would mean a lot to God. May not mean a lot to the state. May not mean a lot to other people. But it mean a lot to God. By creation and by redemption. But you know something else? Also by sanctification. That is, God at the origin said, let's make man in our own image. Man sinned, that image was marred, man fell, but God has still not given up on that idea. He still has the objective of conforming man to his image. For instance, Ephesians 4:24. Galatians, Ephesians, there we are. Ephesians 4:24. Listen to this. And put on the new nature, created after the likeness of God in true righteousness and holiness. Or in 2 Corinthians 3:18, but we all with open face, beholding as in a glass the glory of the Lord, are changed into the same image, more like Christ. And he keeps transforming us day by day. We become a little more like Christ as we walk with him. And then someday what's going to happen? We're going to be just like him. For we shall see him as he is. 1 John 3:2. So you see, to God we are very significant. There we have value. It's built in. It's absolute. It's intrinsic. Just because you're a person. And mean enough to God to have created us, to have redeemed us, and to patiently never give up in seeking to make us more into the image of Christ. Till someday we'll be just like him. Now you know, we need a vision of this. We need to get this clear in our hearts and minds. The value of a person just for himself. And I mean every person. No one should escape our concern that every life shall have meaning. I have a friend who had a spastic little boy, and he died about 13 or 14 years of age. And he couldn't even hold a piece of paper up to that age. You mean that life was devoid of meaning? Did that life have significance or value? I believe it did. The young, the old, the dull, the brilliant, the outcast, the Brahmin, the Greek, the barbarian, every life should have meaning. As some of you know, we have a couple of our kids that are diabetics, and the propensity to this is inherited. And I remember they both developed it about 3 years ago, same summer. And he reminded us of over in John 9, where the people came to Jesus and they said, "Who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" And you remember what Jesus said? Neither one. Neither one. But that the works of God should be manifest in him. And what I'm trying to say tonight, that every life should have meaning and significance. And that which happens or that which transpires is of tremendous concern to God, because every individual is of great value to him. The worth of an individual, the significance of everyone. So every person, every soul is significant by virtue of what he is. That's absolute, that's intrinsic, that's built in. But also, every human soul is significant by virtue of what they can become as a channel of blessing. In other words, the possibilities I'm talking to now of every individual. Now, whereas the worth of an individual is absolute, this is relative, the possibilities. It's contingent on knowledge, capacity, inheritance, cultural background, and above all, on yieldedness. But I think that most all of us tend to greatly underestimate the possibilities of what God can do through a life. Now, God had this in mind way back in Genesis 1. Let's go back there once more. We not only have in Genesis 1, 27 and 28, the worth of an individual by creation, but also as a channel. Let's look at it there. Verse 28. "And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it." Now, God placed man in the Garden of Eden. But Eden was not to be a nice little quiet little sanctuary, a little niche. But rather, it was to be a headquarters out from which man was to participate in this matter of subduing the earth. He was to be a channel through whom God could work. In fact, in Romans 8, it tells us that yet today, all of creation waits and groans, waiting for the redemption of those in Christ, that we are a channel of blessing to the whole creation. And God today still wants to use man as a channel. For instance, if you turn over in Genesis a couple more chapters to Genesis 12, when he called out Abraham, and he called out just to be the father and of a peculiar race of people, a sort of rivulet taken off from the mainstream of humanity. But what did God have in mind? He said to Abraham in Genesis 12:3, "I will bless those who bless you, and him who curses you I will curse, and by you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." Abraham, you are to be a channel of blessing to all the families of the earth. Or take over in the New Testament in Acts 10, for instance. You remember when Cornelius was praying and the angel appeared to him? And the angel said, "Now, Cornelius, I'll tell you what you do. You go over to this other city and you send, there's a man by the name of Simon, and he's dwelling down by the seaside by another man by the name of Simon who's a tanner. And you go send for this man and he'll come and tell you the words that you need to know." So Cornelius found Simon or Peter and brought him back, and Peter preached the word to him. Now let me ask you something. If that angel could talk to Cornelius in such a specific way as to tell him precisely where to go and who to ask for. Could not that angel also have told him the message he needed to know for salvation? Of course he could. But why didn't he? God, for his own reasons, has decided that he wants to use man as a channel for this great good news of the gospel. God wants to use man as a channel. And therefore, he goes to great pains to purify and perfect his servants. Has the going been a little rough lately? Have people really criticized you unjustly? Have things gone from bad to worse? Has just the roof fallen in? Well, now let's just wait a minute. Maybe God has something to do with all of this. You see, whom the Lord loves, he chastens. He apparently feels that we're worth the effort. You see, he wants to use us. He'll put you in the fire. He'll put you under the hammer. But to refine, perfect, and make you a vessel fit for the Master's use. But the thing that's on my heart to get across is this. That every individual is significant to God because of their intrinsic worth and also because of their possibilities as a channel of divine blessing. And generally speaking, we fall into the trap of saying, ah, look at that fellow. What a brain. What an IQ. What looks. What a build. If God could just get a hold of that heart, what a tremendous vessel he'd have there. I remember in Scotland, a little boy about 13 came up to me and he was a spastic. He couldn't hold himself still and he came up to me and said, Mr. Sanny, do you think that God could use me? And I just put my arm around his shoulder and I said, son, I know God can use you. Every life is significant to God, is of worth by creation, by redemption, by sanctification, and as a possibility of a channel of divine blessing far beyond our greatest dreams. I believe that God intends that every life should have meaning, have significance. There are some applications I like to make of this thought, the significance of an individual. Does this thing really get hold of me? Now, not many of you knew Doss Trotman. He was quite an individual. He was rather straightforward, among other things. I remember when I was with the Graham team in Chattanooga, Tennessee, he came to visit and see how I was getting along. I was responsible for the counseling at that time. And we were up in his room, and we were just sitting there talking a little bit, and I made the remark, I said, you know, Doss, with all these large classes we've got and all of the work in the office, I said, you know, you kind of can lose sight of just, you know, this guy here and that one there and the other one here and this real vision. Well, you don't understand what I mean when I say it was direct. He said, well, Sanny, I sometimes wonder if you have that vision. Well, I backed off. And, you know, I worked with him for 11 years. But you know, there's a point there. In other words, how convinced am I of the significance of every individual? I think one evidence will be this. When that conviction is deep enough for me to pick the one out of the crowd. You see, I can get pretty worked up about the world in general, but not very concerned about John or Jane in particular. When Jesus came into town one day and the people were lining the streets, he stopped and he looked up in the tree and he picked out one, Zacchaeus. He says, come on down, am coming to your house today. He picked the one out of the crowd. I think this is a real test of my real conviction of this, the worth, the significance, the possibilities of an individual. Or you remember the time that Jesus was pressed by the multitude and this woman touched him? And he said, "Who touched me?" "Oh," they said, "the crowd's pressing in you all around. Why do you say, 'Who touched me?'" "Oh," he said, "no, somebody touched me." And you see, Jesus recognized the touch of faith to this one, to that one. And I've watched some men of God, servants of the Lord, and watch them operate. And there are some that are just sort of have radar. I think it's the Holy Spirit's direction to pick the one out of the crowd and to pick and to just be led unerringly to one with that open heart that God has prepared. But the point is there anything down inside of me that really has a conviction of the significance of every individual? One of our staff called home the other day, and one of my little kids answered, and they were talking. I don't know who it was. They were talking along, and this person, I realized, then a little later they talked to me, but I realized this was characteristic. You know what I do? "Hello, is your dad there?" But this person is characteristic. They have a little time for everybody. And they had time for a little 9-year-old girl before he talked to her dad. I want this kind of a thing built in me. The significance of every individual. Another thing. I wonder sometimes if my attitude towards people does not restrict and limit them. For instance, you say to a child, "Oh, sing, you can't sing." And they believe it. "Well, you can't draw." "Well, leave that to somebody else that knows." And they believe it. And I think that many a child has grown up just constricted and inhibited because of the incredible power of suggestion. Instead of saying "can't," we ought to say "I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me." In other words, you look at a person, this one or that one, they are not a fixed potential. To say that person will never amount to anything for the Lord, they won't amount to much. Do you think we can ever say that? I don't. They may not be doing too much now, but who knows what new burst of life might transform that person tomorrow. You know, one of the most encouraging episodes in the Bible to me, especially now that I'm getting older. I told you about the 30th birthday. That was a tough one for me. I thought anybody over 30 was over the hill. And I have since discovered I was right. They are over the hill. But you know, I've heard it said, well, you get older, you get set in your ways, and there isn't much you can do about it anymore. Well, I don't want to be like this all my life. There's some changes I'd like to see made. But you remember Jacob? Jacob was mama's boy. Jacob was a sissy. Jacob was a cheat. He was a swindler. And yet you remember that God met him one night in the person of this angel, wrestled with him. And Jacob was changed. And his name was changed. From supplanter to prince with God. And you know how old Jacob was? Somewhere between 90 and 100. And it encouraged me to think that no failure need be final. Right. And it could be that my attitude, my lack of appreciation of the worth and the possibilities of an individual can constrict and restrict. Another thing, do I trust God for people? Doss Trotman used to say that the greatest faith is not the exercise of faith for food and rent, money and clothes. It's to trust God for people. And is my trust in God for people also evidenced by my putting confidence in people? One day, just a couple of years ago, coming back from California on the train, if you ever come back from California, try to take that Burlington train. That's a beautiful ride. Now, I was sitting up in the dome car, and I don't know why I did this. It was stupid, really, but I made a little outline of my life. Not that anybody ever wanted, but for my own sake, anyway. And as I was thinking this through, I thought of the half a dozen people who have meant the most to me in my life. I think of my first grade teacher. I was lived out on the farm. There were 9 kids in school, that is, in all 8 grades. And I went over there with my dog, so my parents tell me, and waited till the kids got out, so they decided to put me into kindergarten. I was 4 at the time. So I went through kindergarten and first grade that year because I was the only one in my class. That is, me and my dog. But you know, as I look back, that teacher took a liking to me. Later she married, named her first boy Lauren. That was kind of a dirty trick. Then as I go on through, I think of a football coach in high school. As I look back, you know what was outstanding? He meant a lot to me. He made me feel like he had confidence in me. I think of the manager at Western Union Telegraph Company, where I worked in California, who helped me to get ahead. As I look back, the outstanding thing in his life and impact in mine was, he always gave me the impression he had confidence in me. My parents, more than once, when I was out with the guys and I could have gotten in some real trouble, you know one thing that restrained me? They always gave the impression that they had confidence in me. Doss Trotman, who took me on as sort of a Timothy, I always felt that he had confidence in me. And you know, every one of us has an immense need to be trusted. And it brings out the best in us. And what I'm saying is that a real grasp of the significance of every individual, their worth to God, and their possibilities as a channel of divine blessing will bring out this something that will put confidence, put trust in people, and in return will bring out things in them that can never be brought out otherwise. Is my vision and worth of the worth and possibilities of an individual such that I give up too soon? We had a fellow some years ago who had trouble as far as women were concerned. And then he got over this, seemed to have victory, and over some period of time, and so Doss sent him overseas. And there he got into trouble again. He had to be brought home. But Doss didn't give up on him, sought to help him. And a couple of years ago, I was driving off the Glen to catch a plane, and he was driving on. And I met him right down there just this side, the second bridge as you come in, and we talked through the car windows. He's having a very useful ministry in a certain denomination today. I'll never forget what he said. He said, "Lauren," he said, "we just got a minute, but let me tell you something." He said, "Don't give up on people too soon." He said, "I don't know where I would be if Doss had given up on me." And I drove off. But I'm thankful for that little reminder. What did Jesus say about the 99? He'll leave the 99 and go out and seek that one that's lost. How long? Until he find it. Then one more question. Do we go deep enough with people? I end up where I started. Do we really get to know people? Or are we simply dealing with the externals? For instance, a person comes into my office and they have a problem. So I sit back and I listen, and I've got the little formulas, problem solving. Assess the situation, define the problem, come up with alternate solutions, pick the right, the best one, put it into action. So we sit, listen, get the situation, the facts, separate fact from opinion, get the problem listed, get some solutions, we pick one, hand it to him, out he goes. helped, maybe. Or suppose a person comes in and they tell the situation. I say, you know, about 5 years ago, I went through a similar circumstance. And I remember, for me, it was like everything I saw through dark glasses. Yeah, that's the way it is with me. And say, not only dark glasses, but magnifying glasses. It seemed dark and worse. Yeah, that's with me too. And you know, and you talk along and you find that you've gone through the same experience. They may walk out of there without a solution, but help far more because you made contact with them on a heart level, down inside, person to person. Not just sort of image to image. I read a sermon not long ago by Helmut Thielicke, this pastor from Hamburg, Germany. He says, what is wrong with the kind of parental love? Now, this is talking about the application of this to our children. They're significant. They have great possibilities of divine blessing as channels. What is wrong with the kind of parental love that concentrates wholly on providing food and drink and clothes and education, perhaps even making great sacrifices to do so, and never gives even the remotest thought to what is going on in the mind and soul of a teenage boy or girl apart from these things? A young man, before taking his own life, wrote to me, said Pastor Thielicke, and in this letter he said, you are the only one whom I am telling what I intend to do. You can tell my parents. They will be thunderstruck. They never knew me, despite all their care for me. They think I'm a real sunny boy when I fall with gusto into my favorite food, which my mother prepares so lovingly. They think they have fed me, but I'm starved. They make a home for me, but I was cold and homeless. Do we go deep enough? Even those in our own home. We go to the little evangelical free church down here on Fontenero and 30th. Our pastor told us this morning that 2 weeks ago today, there was a doctor and his wife and their 16-year-old boy in the service. And after the service, the mother talked to the pastor for about 45 minutes about the boy. This boy was an only son till he was 7. They gave him everything. They didn't restrain him. Anything he wanted, he got. The daughter, the little girl came along. He began to be rebellious and enmity toward that daughter. And the other daughters came and toward the parents. This boy went to a Bible camp week before last. This pastor was there, talked to him for 45 minutes. And last week, this boy out here near Dillon, Colorado, took a knife, hunting knife, and killed both dad and mom. He was in our church just 2 weeks ago. I don't know what all went into there. It's rather an extreme situation, to say the least. But I wonder, with all that we do for them, we provide this, we provide that, we get the car, they can provide the food, the clothes. Do we ever get down deep inside and get to see them as persons? Do we go deep enough to see what's going on in that heart and in that mind? Is it worth the effort? Listen, every individual has a great worth to God. Built-in intrinsic value. And has tremendous possibilities as a channel of divine blessing. Every individual should be significant, is significant, and their life should have meaning. Well, I trust by the power of the Spirit of God, it's my prayer we'll go out of here tonight with a far greater appreciation of one person and their possibilities. Let's pause for prayer, shall we?